Brutally Speaking Podcast is proudly sponsored by Rockabilia.com. For over 30 years, Rockabilia has been the go-to destination for all things band merch. With over 500,000 items in their online store and collaborations with today's hottest bands, you're sure to find something you love. Use our code BREW10 at checkout and take 10% off your total order. So go pick up your favorite new piece of merch now over at Rockabilia.com. Now, on to the show. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Brutally Speaking Podcast. I am your host, John, and this episode's guest is Nick, bassist of Job for a Cowboy, whose latest album, Moon Healer, is out now via Metal Blade Records. Honestly, there's been a handful of things that I kind of wanted to bring up in this. This is another one of those short conversations, kind of done in the middle of a press junket. I do know Nick and I talked, as you'll hear, at the end that we kind of maybe wanted to do another one of these more long form. So I reached out to him. I haven't heard back yet, but hopefully that'll be something maybe we can line up in the nearish future and do more of a longer chat. But, you know, I would be remiss, honestly, to not kind of say what's been going on with me. It's something... Honestly, there's just not really an easy or a quote-unquote fun way to say this. This is just the byproduct of getting older and life happening to all of us. But got a phone call randomly from my dad that was having open-heart surgery. And sort of the conditions that were leading to it. And I gotta say, it was one of the... One of the weirdest and most kind of nonchalant phone calls that I think I've gotten from my parents. But it's one of those things where, you know, nothing can really kind of prepare you for this. You know, obviously I went back home to go be with my mom during my dad's surgery. Everything was fine. Everything is fine. But I had kind of a real eye-opening experience this week of... kind of the beginnings, I guess, of me thinking about what my life will look like with my parents gone. And I know that may sound kind of morbid. I know it may kind of be like a bad thought, quote unquote. But the thing I kind of keep coming back to is just having to have that understanding, that realization, the honesty within yourself of having that conversation. And... I mean, and again, for, you know, people don't know this necessarily, but my mom also has had MS for many, many years now. And, you know, at one point when we were going to grab lunch, I was just walking and realized that I was literally like a full head taller than her now. And we used to be roughly about the same height. And I was like, are you shrinking? And she goes, yeah, I've lost about 2.5 inches. And, you know, I noticed when she was texting everybody that my dad was getting out of surgery and all this kind of stuff that, you know, her hands were shaking really bad. And it just was a thought I had where I think this is the first time ever realizing, or I guess understanding, for lack of a better term, that the good years are still happening, but that the longevity of life is kind of behind us now. And now we're starting to get into the thought that maybe... you know, as my parents are approaching, you know, mid-60s and so forth, that it's like, okay, this is maybe now where, you know, you got 15, 20 years maybe left in you. And I know people live long, and long-living people run in my family and my wife's. But it's one of those things where it just kind of puts everything kind of into a reality check. And it's kind of wild. It's kind of wild to know. And, you know, I've talked about it quite a bit with stuff I've gone through with therapy and losing a ton of close friends and family and so forth, that obviously I know that death happens. But when it kind of just something like this happens, it kind of shakes you a little bit to your core and makes you kind of reassess and reevaluate things. And honestly, it, it's been just kind of a challenging week, to say the least. So everything is good. My dad is back home. He is on the road to recovery. You know, it's crazy how technology has come and how easy they're able to do things. You know, in my mind, having open heart surgery and then, you know, being discharged and going home, you know, 3 to 4 days later just blows my mind. But it's the reality of the world we live in now, with the advances in medical technology and all that kind of stuff. And I guess I'm just really thankful that everything happened and that my dad had doctors that were pushing to make sure that this got taken care of in a very timely manner before it got worse. And I would be lying if I didn't say that it's also making me assess those same things myself, that I need to not be afraid of things, because I think something that stuck out was my mom saying that if my dad would actually go to doctors, that a lot of this could have been avoided probably many, many years ago. So I think I have to face the same thing and realize that maybe, you know, most of my family has had heart conditions or something, or that there's underlying issues, and me growing up with a heart condition straight out the gate, that maybe I need to go to a doctor and get all this looked at and figure out like what my future looks like. My wife's been doing it with her diabetic condition at this point that she's been diagnosed with in the last year or so. So I think I'd kind of need to follow the example of those around me that have taken these things into their own hands and do so accordingly. So I guess that's my little bit of a PSA on life and making sure that you're checking in with people and taking care of yourself. It's a lot harder than I think we realize sometimes. All that said, I don't want to keep blabbing, but I did want to say that because it's honestly what I've been dealing with the whole week. So it has been pretty much on my mind nonstop. So without further ado, let's get into my conversation with Nick, and I'll talk to you on the other side of it.
Here we go.
Sorry, I'm sorry. It's so tough to finish in 30 minutes because, like, I talk a lot too, and so I'm like, they should be an hour, but
That's usually what most everyone usually knows, to give me almost no time limit. usually the whole point of usually this is more of just an actual like casual conversation than like a let me ask you about the record and all that stuff.
Sure, exactly.
But since it is a 20-minute thing, I feel like I kind of got to ask a few interviewee-type questions to get the ball rolling. But you've been asked this a million times, I apologize. But something in listening to Moon Healer, because I just got it like a day and a half ago.
Right.
Is this sort of a continuation in some sort of a story to Sun Eater, like some kind of a parallel story to it? Like, I didn't have any lyrics to look at to kind of go back and forth between the two and see. But
okay.
Is that a thing?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, it's the same character from Sun Eater, and this is sort of more like if they continued down that path that they were going, and like how deep down the rabbit hole would they go? Now it's like it also is like can be standalone on its own. You know, it's kind of like Johnny kind of imagined like an alchemical scientist, you know, creating his own hallucinogenic entheogens to sort of, I guess, find the nature of reality, you know, find the nature of consciousness or the root of consciousness, or answer those perennial questions of, you know, who are we, where do we come from, what happens when we die, you know? And so it can stand on its own, but it is definitely like rooted in the same character and just sort of like turned up to 11, you know what I mean?
This album is definitely turned up, that's for sure. And honestly, one of the things, this might be a weird compliment, but I was really surprised at how well the mix was. Like, I didn't feel like anything was fighting for the mix. And honestly, the bass tone is really nice and clean and, like, comes through really sharp. And a lot of times I think when you listen to music like this, especially in the heavier genre and when down tuning and stuff, everything just kind of becomes one percussive kind of instrument at times. And I feel like this very much had defined rhythm, you know, leads, your bass playing, the drumming, even the vocals. I felt like everything just sat really nice in the mix. How long did it take to kind of find that fine balance? Because I feel like it's the age old quarrel of bands is like, you should turn me up just a little bit more.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You show up for mixing. As soon as the mixing starts, everybody shows up with their turn me up shirts. but yeah, it's that's a great question. Nobody's actually asked that yet. About, you know, the actual mix side of it. And it took a lot actually, because, you know, things were changed because I think on this one, we were using a 7-string, and there was some stuff that Tony dropped down. There was a couple tracks that Tony dropped down. I think we were in like fucking G sharp, maybe. That sounds about right. G sharp, like drop G sharp or whatever it would be. I'm not really a big low. I used to be all about the low end tuning. You know, I had a bass with an F sharp string on it, like in 2003, before any of y'all motherfuckers. But I just found it to not sound like it was on the same instrument, and I just found that there's like a limit to the heaviness that you get and retaining note definition and chord definition. I feel like everybody that's in the E, drop E, you know, an 8-string with the drop E or lower, it can get really fucking difficult to hear the difference between two. If you play the open note and the first fret, I'm like, it's so close down. The perception of frequency range down there isn't that rad. So, but I feel like we were able to, G sharp was doable for us. But still, when you do that only on 2 songs or 3 songs or whatever it is, low end's different. Totally changes the low end. So then you got to go and like find the balance point in the mix between, you know, how all the songs that were in D or in just A standard, you know, 7-string A standard, how those would sound. So, and a lot of comparing and contrasting back to Sun Eater, you know, like we're consistently going back to the previous record being like, is this the same ballpark? They're supposed to be their sister records, you know, it's like a sequel. And so it's one of those things where, you could work on that forever. Like, I think like the recording side of things is the exact same as the mixing side of things, which is probably the exact same as the mastering side of things, which is like, it's never finished. Like you just have to turn it in, you know?
Right.
But so, I mean, I would say like, dude, I like hyper fine tooth comb, listen to that record 30 times in January last year, maybe more. Like, so we'd make a change. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We turned it into Metal Blade. Like, I think it was like January, maybe it was like February, mid February. We turned it into them, but it's been almost a year. Vinyl now. Vinyl is like, nine years to print vinyl or whatever it is. We were actually done with this record in 2015 and, it was ready to go, and they were just like, "Ah, dude, there's a 10-year wait for vinyl to get printed." So we,
you know,
like,
there's
going to
be,
we got to have vinyl.
Listen,
so
to this and think that that's a real factor spinning, that you were done with this record a year after the last one.
Yep, exactly. We recorded it at the same time as the last one, but they're like, "Hey, Lady Gaga, or no, Adele is going to buy like all the vinyl in the world, and it's going to take us like 10 or 11 years to get this printed on vinyl." And you can't release a record without doing vinyl. So we were like, all right, Tony's like, I'll go to med school. Johnny's like, all right, I'm going to have a couple kids, just get it printed. And then when it's done, we'll come back, you know?
Well, and this kind of, in a funny way, kind of leads to a question I really like to ask, because I think it's just an interesting question about growth as a person and how we kind of traverse life. But, you know, obviously being, and I know you're still touring with a few other bands and so forth, so I know this question may not be as cut and dry, but, you know, Jaffer Cowboy, it's been 11 years, or actually 10 years since the last record. And I always kind of like to ask, what's it like when the thing you're kind of, you've been putting all your eggs in that basket and you're known for, what's it like when you step away from it, and what does it mean to you then when you're kind of able to have a distance from it? And then kind of, what does it mean when you come back, and is there a redefinition of your why for Jaffer Cowboy?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think this was just a unique situation separate from all my other bands where, you know, people were kind of making the decision to go do some like major life adult goal things, like have children, get married, you know, move to Ireland, go to med school, become a physician. You know, Al's a huge fan of Orange is the New Black. So he became a guard, like a CO in a correctional facility for a while. And everybody just had these weird things that they wanted to do. And I mean, I wanted to keep playing music. I especially with Sunny to drop, I was like, dude, this is my favorite thing I've done. Like, let's go play. And especially because then the offers were really good because the record resonated with more people than any of the previous releases had, because I think we had really kind of come into our own. But I think that there was something then it was put in a place then where you're like, after you make peace with the fact that you're like, okay, these guys are taking, you know, massive amount of time off to do these things that they want to do to make themselves fulfilled in life. So you can't hold anger for it. You just like, oh, okay, well, we'll come back to it when we can. But it was funny though, because like, when I think about it, people, to everybody else, it looks like, yeah, we've been gone for 10 years, despite the one show world tour in Vancouver in 2016. But we've been working on shit like almost since then. Like, maybe it didn't get like serious. And we didn't be like, okay, now we got 9 or 10 songs, let's like get in there and record these till 2018-ish. But I mean, we were listening to Tony's demos in the van at Modified Ghost Fest, like in 2016. There's 2-3, you know, maybe even up to like 4 songs that were demoed out then. So like, we've been slowly working on this, and Job for Cowboy's been like busy in the background for at least like 6, if not 8 years, you know? So that's just something people don't see. I mean, we would tease it a little bit, you know, on the Insta or on socials, you know, being like, throw the fucking skeleton on the fucking studio desk, you know, like us and Necrophagist, you know, racing to see who could not put out a record first. But it was like one of those things where, you know, we just kind of, you are seeing this massive chunk of your life that you spent so much time working on and so much time like doubting even if it was ever going to get finished, because it was just the process was so arduous and long. And then like, it's coming out in 2 weeks, and it's kind of a mind trip to me, because, you know, measuring your life in terms of like the work that you've completed, you know, and then realizing like this wasn't just a 2-year album cycle. Like most records, a lot of times in bands, when you're out touring, you're like, yeah, about every two years is when you're supposed to put a record out. And so you'd be like, oh, one record would represent 2 years of work of your life, you know, including the writing, the recording, the promotion, and then, you know, touring for it. But this is like fucking, you know, it feels like a decade of my life that went into this record. So it's weird and bittersweet and cool and awesome that it's finally going to go out there. And that it's just going to be weird to in, you know, a 1 month be like, oh, that Moon Healer came out last month. Where it's in my head for fucking so long now, it's like never coming up.
Well, this might be an odd question as well, but with the large gap of time, was there much discussion as to how you wanted to present the band? Like, obviously getting, you know, demos brought to you, like, hey, I think this is where we're going to start off at. But I think it's when you have that much time off from when you've done something, it's almost kind of like getting another stab at like the first record, where it's like we get to reintroduce ourselves to people and what are we now? What do we want to be? And I don't know if there's like a lot of discourse on that, or if it's just kind of, hey, here's what I'm thinking. I think it's going to be the new Job record. What do you guys think? And then you just all collectively go, sure, we feel good about this.
Right. Yeah. That's really cool. You know, I have thought about it this whole time. As this is our second record, you know, like I feel like with what we did with Sun Eater, where we basically are like, whatever mental space we were in, you know, for Demonocracy and especially Gloom when I first came into the band in 2011, and Ruination and Genesis and whatever everybody's headspace was at, Sun Eater was like, let's it was like we had like a moment of clarity, as you know, alcoholics often define that they'll have. And it was like, we were like, let's make this record. Like this, that we had this concept, we had this idea, like this almost like kind of outline. And we were like, let's make that shit. Fuck everybody else. Well, that's something that sounds cool. I like the idea of that. Let's do that. And we did. And so to me, that in some ways it was like our first record as that band. And then, so that this record now is, feels like, this is our sophomore, really. It feels like that. It kind of has the pressure of that too, where I'm like, is it going to stand up to Sun Eater? Are people going to think it's going to be as good, especially being written as a sequel? But, and we kind of knew that we were going to go with the same artist, with Tony Cole, and that we were going to kind of do the inverse of the kind of color scheme, you know, with having the sun orange on this one. We're going with the kind of bluey, purpley night colors on this one. And so it was kind of like this slow, it's like we knew what we wanted to make the whole time, so we knew how we were going to present it. I guess we just didn't think it was going to take this long, you know?
Well, I think listening to you, it's and listening to how, you know, you're interacting with the rest of the guys that make up the band, it almost sounds like maybe where there was trepidation as younger versions of yourselves, like, we want to do this, but what will people think? Because, right, you know, unfortunately, in the music industry, it's one of those things where, you know, you're damned if you move too far away from what everyone thinks you're going to do, because then you change too quickly. But if you keep doing the same shit, then, well, you just write the same record over and over and over again.
Exactly.
And so I feel like there has to be this kind of mid ground, especially, it's kind of, and kind of on a side tangent for a second, it's kind of why I really do like the idea of singles every couple of like months, because then the change, quote unquote, doesn't feel so drastic. It feels more in time, where it's like, oh, yeah, I understand why you did this, because this is informed by this, da 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 da. And if I don't like this one thing, I'm not going to think it's going to be how everything from here on out sounds. And it gives you a little bit more room to experiment. But that being said, I feel like, you know, there is something to be said about creating a cohesive album listening experience. You know, being almost 40 at this point, like, I am a fan of full albums and listening to going on a journey and stuff.
Sure.
But I feel like maybe this is you guys understanding and just being more comfortable with who you are and what you do and want to do, and not being afraid to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a total passion project, you know, like, it's not for the money. It's not for the, you know, notoriety that you can get in extreme metal or whatever. It's a passion, something we wanted to make. It's a piece of art that represents who we are as individual musicians, but also as this like collective thing, you know, the name Job for a Cowboy, what we're trying to create and bring into the world, you know. And I love that concept too, of the freedom of being able to not be tied to records, you know. And for some of my bands, I think I would prefer that, but doing the conceptual side of things and putting a bigger piece of art out is just really fulfilling for this, I think, this style of art, you know what I mean? Like, in order to express all these different ideas, like, you need 35 to 38 minutes, you know, 40 minutes of music, where 20 minutes isn't enough to get across, you know, a concept as large as what we were trying to go for, you know?
Absolutely.
That being said, that might probably be really fun to do, like, if we could do like an EP, but like a concept EP.
I was going to say, where, like, passages of sorts, essentially.
Yeah, that would be cool, because then we could, again, like you said, like, people would be like, well, it's just an EP, so they're not like going to this forever, but we could get even weirder, you know, which I love that side of the exploration side of it. You're always going to have the, you know, traditional, you know, death metal essence of the band is never not going to be there. And so it's like, we don't worry about that. You know, it's more like, okay, you're serving this, you know, steak for your main thing. You know, what are the side dishes? What are the accoutrements? You know, like, what are you putting around it? Because we know that this is going to be there. So to me, like, that's almost the more important part. Like, what makes the main dish so good is how carefully, you know, thought out and creative you are with the side dishes.
Absolutely.
So I think that'd be really fun to do. And then, you know, I mean, I hope that we can get out and get some touring in, but it's so funny seeing this, is I'm kind of coming to the end of the press that I've been doing too for like 3 weeks now or 4 weeks. it's like, oh, okay, we're almost here to the record. And I'm like that is the bittersweet, almost like a, like pre-nostalgia, you know,
yeah.
Where I'm like, oh, I'm going to miss this and it's going to be over soon. And, but it does make me be like, we just need to fucking start writing then, like right away. You know what I mean? That's well, how that you almost skip that feeling. Be like, just work on a new song, you know?
Well, that almost was going to lead into the next thing is, you know, obviously with the knowing that you guys are finding out that you've been sitting on this for a year, literally, if there was more like creativity going, because in the downtime of just like waiting, it's like, all right, well, I have other ideas that maybe didn't have time to flesh out. And so now maybe you're like, all right, we're already working on the next thing. Whenever it's going to come out, that's, you know, to be determined down the road. But I was going to say, are you guys looking forward to start writing and redoing something or already have? Because that's the other part of doing a band thing I find so interesting is, especially when you have long album delays, like to put it out,
right?
Is you're maybe having to then do this press cycle and be like, yeah, man, this record was cool a year ago when I listened to it to death versus now you're stoked on like, man, if I could play you the shit we've been writing right now, I'm really amped on that, but I can't talk to you about that for 2 years.
Yep. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's it. I mean, there's a piece that didn't make it on this record that is like my favorite thing. Maybe one of my favorite things that the band's ever made. It's a short piece, but Tony wrote this like thing on guitar, and it's like one of my favorite things he's ever written. And then I took it and started getting weird with it. Kind of like with Son of Nihility, the track from the second track off of Sun Eater, where I just kind of take something and just put it in my DAW and just start getting weird. And we couldn't fit it into this record. It was originally going to like maybe open the record or be a segue in the middle of it, but we just didn't have time to do it. We did end up having like a time crunch at the end when the label's like, okay, if it's coming out by here or, you know, whenever, like it's got to be in at this time. So we've got that. And then Tony's already, I think he's already sent like two or three new tracks already and they're in a different direction. That's really cool. That's different. He's like, I've just been playing a lot of this guitar and listening to these type of guitarists and I love it. And so, that's kind of what makes me excited, I guess, about the putting out of this, like the fruition process is almost complete, you know, for this record. Like it's finally like ready to serve, you know, and you kind of release it into the wild and really release it into the past. You know, I mean, I remember talking to somebody and they're like, dude, you know, records are only valid. They're only new for like a week. You know what I mean? Like there's so much content out there. There's so much shit coming out that like, you know, 2 months ago is not a new record, you know, and in the wider, you know, culture perspective eye, I guess. But I think that's something that is we're looking forward to doing is like, you know, I guess being done with these songs, besides, you know, playing them live or choosing which ones we're going to play live, or if my world, I would love if we could do the whole record live and even do all Sun Eater, all the Moon Healer in one giant thing. But that's a hard sell to everybody else. But that's the thing is you should really hear the new shit we're working on, dude. It's way cooler than Moon Healer.
You can go ahead and email it to me when you're done.
All right, sick, dude.
Actually, it's funny because I, like a friend of mine just sent me like their new record that's about to come out and was like, let me know what you think. And I'm like, okay. And then I didn't get back to him for like probably about a week. And he's like, do you hate it? And
I was
like,
no. Did it suck that bad?
I just haven't had time to like sit down and really listen to it. And then the other day I hit him up and I was like, have you guys released? I don't think you've released a single, right? He goes, no. And I was like, this is the clear cut like single. Like if you go like call it one, like a lead off single, this would be the follow up. I think this is like really cool. Da, da, da. He's like, oh, thank God. Oh, okay. But it's like to me, it was interesting because I've also heard some of these songs in demo form or like pre-pro. And it's so interesting to see where a song can go from the initial idea to its actual final recording, how you can fuck things up with like just even how you attempt to like mic everything, like your guitar tone's not great, and then it's like, okay, the demo was way better, what did you do there, like why is it right. What is it about that sounds so much better? Is it because it's a fresh idea and you're excited about it versus I've played that riff a million times now I'm over it and I'm just getting it to get it down? Like it's just interesting to see demoitis.
Yeah. So do you read that Rick Rubin book?
I haven't, but I've been listening to his podcast, and he
should check it out. He probably covers most of it of what would be in the book in his podcast, but you should just the way he collected it and the way he presents it, especially the audiobook, because he narrates it, and so he has this whole, you know, the bell rings, dong. It's like spiritual music guru, you know, but the information is great on it. It's really good, dude, and it's right in line with what we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing for me for the longest time is not that I hate on Rick as a person. I just didn't like – I never thought he was a good producer because I'm like, you don't fucking know how to do any of the quote-unquote producing.
Right.
And then I realized that, like, the podcast he did with, like, Trent Reznor and stuff and some of these other people that he's done them with, I realized it's more that what he's doing is producing an atmosphere that allows creativity. And he's kind of like a therapist where it's like he taps into going, that's why are you second guessing yourself? Just get out of your own way and let this thing be. And that's where the magic happens. And to me, and I'm like, okay, so you may not be a producer in the technical sense, but now that I'm hearing you and how you talk with artists and stuff, I realize that there's something more to it than just capturing the notes and so forth.
Right. I remember Corey Taylor coming out at one point. Somebody was asking, it might have been on one of his solo shows way back, like 11 or something like that. But he was talking about, you know, when they did, I think it was Volume 3, and they're like, and he was like, they were like, we didn't see him. You know, they're like, he wasn't there. Like his people, it's kind of like when you see the big attorneys around town that have the, you know, the super easy phone number, and they're like, they always get $300 million per case or whatever. Like if you don't have the $300 million case, you don't get that guy, you know, like you get his proteges or whatever, you know what I mean? But yeah, so I would love to give Rick Rubin a shot. You know what I mean? Let's do it. Let's try.
There you go. I know you got to go to get ready for the next one. I would love to have you back on at some point.
Let's do it, man. Bullshit. Yeah. Shoot me something on, shoot me something on the socials or something. And, I'm down to do stuff. I have, you know, a billion other bands, but we could have spent another 2 hours talking about this shit alone, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Cool, man. So for the plug, where can everyone find you or anything you'd like to plug online real quick?
So most of my stuff, all my socials is at Nick Shinz, S-H-I-N-Z. That's Instagram, YouTube, X, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll be putting most of my stuff up there. JFAC social, I believe it's JFAC official. It's a little something on everybody else. And it'd be cool to go back and be like, hey, guy who has job for a cowboy, actual handle, you know, who doesn't post anything. Can we fucking, you know, have that? But yeah, so anyways, squatters hit me up on there. And, yeah, squatters rights. I started doing that. Actually, anytime I have a band name, I go onto Instagram and just like get it, you know, and those joke band names, you know, so I have like 50 of them just in case somebody ever comes up with it. And then like, hey, yep, buddy, we got to go. But anyways, thanks a lot, John. It was a pleasure talking to you, dude.
Yeah, you as well. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, man. Likewise. And nice Outkast shirt.
So that was my conversation with Nick. Want to thank him again for taking the time. And hopefully we get to do a little bit more of a part two and a longer chat. Would definitely like to talk to him more. And, you know, to kind of even correlate it to what the intro was about. You know, I think we sort of touched on, you know, with Jaffer Cowboy being, you know, 10 years or maybe a little over 10 years from the last record to this one, you know, the band just recently coming back. It's something where I think you kind of have to take that step back and just understand where you're at in life and where does this thing fit in and what do you want out of it and how do you proceed moving forward. And it's funny it's funny sometimes when making these intros, outros, when thinking about these episodes and, you know, the conversations I have, that at times it's like, okay, this is just kind of its own thing. And then here I am this week, you know, because I drop these pretty much in sequential order when I do them. And now I'm really thinking about, you know, what I obviously talked about in the intro to how it correlates to Nick and to the job for a cowboy guys. And, you know, just how do they proceed moving forward? And how do you know what you want and the direction to go? And when does it feel right? And, you know, all these questions that you ask. And it sort of speaks to the tenure and I guess the legacy and the life of the band and of the individuals. And I don't know, maybe I'm just, because of what I've been through, maybe I'm reaching for a correlation, but when I was kind of thinking about everything leading up to me doing this, it's something that I just kind of really thought about was, you know, how I don't know. Maybe it's even in the fact that, you know, the last record, Sun Eater, you know, when I listen to it now, and I've been listening to it, so I can listen to both records back to back and just kind of get more of a vibe of how the full arc of the story goes. I feel like when I listen to it, I feel like Sun Eater is kind of this thing where it's kind of youthful recklessness. It's sort of just this thing where I hate to say it so bluntly, but it's like, you know, you're just eating, you're just overindulging, you're overdoing everything because you're young, and it's the youthfulness. And, you know, another pun or a metaphor, I guess, is, you know, that we don't ever think of anything burning out, but inevitably that's sort of what happens. And I think as you get older, you know, you start trying to find ways to start healing yourself, maybe healing from the past things that you've done wrong, and taking in a new, hopefully, I guess, a more positive thing as you move forward, unless you're just a shitty person your whole fucking life. But, and when I think of, and when I listen to Moon Healer, I feel like it kind of is doing that. It's trying to undo and be more informed of the things that we did as our youth, and kind of trying to, I don't want to say right the wrongs or anything like that. I think that puts too much emphasis on, you know, being negative as a youth, but I think there's just something about being wiser and more mature in your approach to things. And I think that that's something, you know, things kind of slow down at night. You know, things kind of tend to slow down. They're not as fast paced. And I think that's kind of a metaphor for life as you get older. Again, maybe with what I've been dealing with this past week, maybe the double album listening is revealing something that's only revealing it to me because I want it to be there. Perhaps there are these same themes that when you listen to it, when you look at everything, the art, the titles and everything, maybe these sort of similar things will start presenting themselves to you as well. Ultimately, that's the beauty of music, though. It kind of is there when you need it to be, and you can pull things out of it that maybe really weren't there from the beginning, but are there for you, and you hear them. I've always said, you know, it's interesting when people ask me about, you know, a new song, a new record, how I feel about something, a band, and I'm like, I'm not really an authority on any of this shit. I don't know. But I do kind of value the fact that people come to me and want my opinion on these things. And maybe it's because I take the time to feel something, to let it all kind of unravel and reveal whatever it's going to for me, and then I'm able to articulate it to people. And I don't know. I have had a handful of people somewhat recently that listen to the show when talking about certain records and so forth, and even going back through this podcast, and someone recently has been going back through some discography discussion things, and, you know, sending some DMs and so forth. And it's really crazy to think that anyone gives a fuck about anything I'm saying or values my opinion on music when I had no hand in making it. I'm just simply someone who likes music a lot and takes the time to really let it sink in and kind of articulate how and what it does to me. All that said, I definitely think you should go pick up the new Moon Healer record. If you've not listened to it already, what are you waiting for? That conversation was pretty short, so you have plenty of time now to go listen to Moon Healer. And I would be really interested, honestly, too, to see what everyone does. If you listen to Sun Eater and Moon Healer back and forth, play them back to back, and I want to kind of get more interest in what you all think of it. What does it reveal to you when you're now able to listen to these albums together that are obviously companion pieces? So let me know. You can email me at brutallyspeaking@gmail.com. I usually save that for the very, very end, but you can do it here. Go to the socials, BrutallySpeakPod, let me know. I'd love to keep this conversation going. But to start wrapping up this conversation the way I usually do, if you would like to keep up with Job for a Cowboy, you can find them on Facebook at Job for a Cowboy, Instagram at JFAC Official, and Twitter at JFAC Metal. And you could always go to metalblade.com/jobforacowboy. That will also take you to their merch store, tour dates, like everything, all that kind of stuff. If you'd like to keep up with Nick, you can find him on Instagram and Twitter at Nick Shins. He's been making the podcast rounds, so if you enjoyed this conversation, go check him out on some of the other shows he's been on. Definitely someone I am looking forward to hopefully having back on the show soon to do a part two, more lengthy. Would just like to pick his brain and talk a little bit more about some other things. But I think this is a good intro, toe dipping into some conversation with Nick. So And obviously, if you would like to keep up with the podcast, I kind of just said it all. You can email me at brutallyspeaking@gmail.com. Find us everywhere at BrewSpeakPod. And I want to thank my podcast sponsor. And the reason I'm kind of laughing is as of when I'm recording this, this past week has been just kind of really, really all over the place for me, mentally, emotionally, and all that kind of stuff. But Frankie over at Rockabilia, I fucking love that dude so much. If you are following our socials and you follow any of the news sites, you will see that Loudwire apparently picked up an article stating some back and forth discourse on social media of basically Rockabilia putting out the Kanye Burzum shirts, which is really just a meme in and of itself. Basically, Kanye was wearing a Burzum shirt, you know, and a lot of people get all bent out of shape about anybody that's not in the rock or metal scene wearing rock or metal stuff. And you can feel however you want about that. But what was funny is, and rightfully so, Burzum then did the thing everyone does now in the meme culture where you just take a screenshot of that thing and then now it's another thing. So it's a Burzum shirt of Kanye wearing a Burzum shirt. It's very meta. It's very amusing. And I think it's just very much a snapshot of what everything looks like in 2024. You can say whatever you want about Kanye or Burzum or whatever, but at the end of the day, it's a fucking t-shirt, and I don't know. But Rockabilia got caught up in some shit. Loudwire ended up sharing the episode. Frankie and I had a conversation for a little while about it, you know, making the round, and you know, it was really cool that, you know, and I felt really valued that he would call me and want to talk through what he was feeling and what the company was going through and all that kind of stuff. And it's something where even today, as I'm recording this, I went to take my dog to the dog park with my wife, or to the park, I should say, and I found I had a flat tire, like severely flat. Like, I don't even think I made it one house past mine. And I was like, something's wrong with my tire. And it was shot. Something, like, I found something in it. It couldn't be patched. So I have to buy all new tires. And like a lot of things going on in my life, sometimes when life hands me a shit sandwich, sometimes I reach out to Frankie and I'm like, hey, I need to send an invoice. And if I could get that like pretty quickly, I have a pretty massive bill that, like a life bill that's due. A few months ago, I was having some really bad issues with my shower head not draining, and we had to have a whole new piping and all this stuff installed. So it became a thing where I definitely needed some money that I had earned through doing this. And, you know, I made it a point to tell Frankie how much the sponsorship really means to me, beyond just sometimes I get some free shirts or whatever, but that it really is life-changing in the sense of I need it for something, and I don't get paid. I don't have, you know, wasn't budgeting for this thing to happen. And, you know, these things, this money that I get through Rockabilia sponsorship, really does help me in my day-to-day life more often than I would like to admit. So I want to give a huge, huge shout-out to everyone over at Rockabilia. Go pick up some new merch. Go pick up that Kanye Burzum shirt if you're feeling so adventurous. I know I will be getting one soon. You will probably see me wear it. I don't think it's a shock or anything about how I feel about Kanye as an artist. I think some of the things about him personally or whatever, but I can separate art from the person, be that as it may. But go to rockabilia.com, pick up some merch. You can use our code BRUTALLY. Again, the code works now. That was another thing we did during the phone call, was we got the code working. And I just also want to say thank you so much to everyone that's been using it. The handful of you that reached out and said that it isn't working so I can get this addressed. Obviously, you guys using that code means a lot. And it's what has kept the sponsorship relationship going and thriving. So thank you to everyone who goes and use the code. Again, go to rockabilia.com, use our code BRUTALLY at checkout and get 10% off your total purchase order. And for the podcast, I am John, and I will see you all next week, where I have Tim Lambesis and Ken Susie of Esli Dying joining me. That was a really fun, interesting conversation. Very complimentary of each other, but we'll get into that next week. So remember to let the people that you love, let them know that you do. Call your parents, talk to your family, do whatever. I know everyone, as cliche as it is, says those things, but I think in light of the week I've just had, that's really what I've been doing a lot of. Do it and enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll talk to you all next time.